and welcome to the podcast where you will heal the relationship with yourself, unlearn the limiting beliefs that tell you it's better to blend in than stand out, and realize that you are more than enough. You are incredible. I am your host, Susan Padron, an intuitive personal stylist and award-winning author featured in InStyle and many publications accessible all over the world. I am a tattooed queer mom who is showing up to give you the gentle nudge or emotional hug, whichever you need, so that you can give yourself the permission to be you. This is the Susan Padron Podcast. Hello, hello. I am so thrilled that you're here. Before we dive into what I'm about, I want to share with you my journey about how I got here. I think I've known that I've wanted to be a personal stylist since I was old enough to go to the mall with my friends. I would find so much joy from picking out the clothes for them and watching my friends be able to see themselves the way that I see them just by getting a little nudge to try something different. I also had a fascination with style makeover shows. I feel like a lot of us do. And that's totally normal. But for some reason, I have this mental block that I couldn't become a personal stylist. Like, it wasn't an appropriate definition of a successful career. I didn't know anyone who was a personal stylist growing up, you know, in the 90s and early 2000s. It definitely was not a common career. I grew up outside of Philadelphia in the suburbs. So I don't think I ever ran into a personal stylist during my time living there. And I don't think I really knew enough about being a personal stylist or studying fashion to know if I could do it. I was also really shy growing up, which, you know, is something that even makes me laugh to think about now. I was quiet and I remember feeling so much safer just observing a situation and then kind of determining if I wanted to interact with it or if I wanted to be involved. So becoming something like a personal stylist or any career in the fashion industry would take a lot of courage that I really didn't think that I was capable of, at least for a long time. I have always been fascinated by people, their emotions, the psychology behind it all. So that was my first step towards a career. I majored in psychology first, and that did not last long. Lots of studying about dead white guys and their theories rather than learning about the workings of the mind. I was bored. I had enough. I changed. So instead, I followed my other passion at the time, which was music. And I pursued music education, which ironically enough, just also heavily focused on dead white guys, but it was still something that I really enjoyed. I enjoyed playing, I enjoyed performing, and I figured that going into music education would lead me into a more safe and stable kind of career. So my first year out of college, I did not get a teaching job. So I performed professionally. One of the longest professional gigs that I had was playing in a pit orchestra for The Wizard of Oz in a theater outside of Philadelphia. It was 7 shows a week for 7 weeks. And I played almost all of them. The entire gig was a shit show, to say the least. But that's a story that I will share another time. So once The Wizard of Oz ran its course, I realized how much I did not want to live the professional musician life. And I put my focus back on getting a teaching job. And within the year, I got my first full-time teaching job, which was middle school band. And I taught middle school band for 7 years. And truthfully, I would say for the first 4 years, I loved it. Like really, really loved it. My students were like my kids, like my children. And my job was a huge part of my life. And I was constantly thinking about work. And I even had a lot of anxiety about the idea of starting a family because it would mean that I would have to step away from my classroom for a bit. And if you read my award-winning book, We Don't Do Just Okay Anymore, you know how things changed. So after teaching for about 4 years, I finally felt ready to become a mom, you know, as ready as you can be. And so my husband, Tony, and I started our family. And I find it's really funny to reflect back on how you envision yourself as a parent before you actually become one. My vision of myself as a mom included having two kids and being a stay-at-home mom. And spoiler alert, not a stay-at-home mom. And I am very fulfilled parent of a single child. But my mom was a stay-at-home mom, and I loved that she was home with me and my sister. My sister was also a stay-at-home mom for a while with her kiddos. So I had these two really incredible role models in my life that were both stay-at-home moms. And at the time when I was pregnant, I really couldn't imagine being a mom any other way. And after my son was born, I took a year off from teaching, and I'm so, so grateful that I had that time with him in his first year of life. But honestly, my mental health was really bad. I remember taking the postpartum depression survey in my doctor's office and thinking, well, I don't feel like that, but I also don't feel okay. And it really wasn't until a year or so later that I learned about postpartum anxiety and realized that that's what I had been experiencing. So during my time off, during that first year when I was home with my son, my husband unfortunately lost his job. And that meant that I had to go back to work. I had to go back to teaching. We needed the benefits and all of that, so that's what I did. Even before I went back to teaching, I knew just how unhappy I was. It was more than just the shift that I'd become a mom and my priorities changed. I felt really unfulfilled with my career. And at that point, I also knew that I could never be a stay-at-home mom. I have a tremendous amount of respect for stay-at-home moms. I personally am just not built to be one, and that's okay. So this is a point in my life when my mental health struggled the most. And during those first few months when I was teaching again, I knew something had to change. My anxiety and my anxiety attacks felt completely out of control. And with the help and support of my doctor, I started on medication to just give me the ability to catch my breath. So I actually opened up myself to the idea of pursuing a different career. And styling my friends for upcoming events, helping them find something to wear, all of that had always been a lifelong hobby and passion of mine. And so that's when I started really pursuing becoming a personal stylist. I realized that this is what I could do. You know, I had some conversations with my friends at the time. They gave me that validation that I needed. And I had my light bulb moment. I was like, here we go. So all that being said, though, creating your own business is all fun and games until you tell people you're quitting your full-time job to pursue it. Then it's all, but the stability, but the benefits, but the regular paycheck. Oh yeah, the same stability that left my husband unemployed right after we had our baby? No thanks. I don't need that. So while a lot of other moms I knew with kids the same age as my son were pregnant with their second child, I was building my business. I kept waiting to feel emotionally ready to have another baby, and not too long after that, I was diagnosed with endometriosis. So my diagnosis with endometriosis is something else that I really dive into in my book, We Don't Do Just Okay Anymore. And maybe someday I'll share about it on the podcast too. But what I will say is that my diagnosis forced me to re-examine how I live my life and what I truly want from it. My body changed during the time that I had my diagnosis and was going through treatment. And my style really evolved then too. My personal style now has to support the fact that sometimes I'm in pain and I don't want to lose myself in those moments. I want my self-expression to be present no matter how I feel physically. Whether I'm having a flare-up or not, I want to feel like me. My body doesn't dictate how I feel about myself. I do. So when you start your own business, you are also the one determining your definition of success. You don't have a corporate ladder to climb. You're not going up the salary step ladder until you reach the top. You define success for yourself, but it doesn't feel like it. because imposter syndrome is a sneaky little bitch. And it's easy to find yourself seeking outside validation, especially early on. There was a time when I thought success looked like being a celebrity stylist. So I assisted celebrity stylists in New York who worked with celebrities like Alicia Keys, Alana Glazer, and Gwendolyn Christie. And these stylists also worked on major fashion editorials. I was running all over New York City, pulling top name designer pieces from different PR offices and fashion houses, only to be treated poorly, barely paid, if at all, and not even being allowed to talk. I assisted 3 different celebrity stylists before I realized that this was absolutely not for me. I remember looking at these stylists, the lives that they were living, how poor their mental and physical health was, and saying to myself, this is what I'm supposed to aspire to? Absolutely not. So I did continue to assist stylists in Philadelphia to work on commercial photo shoots, and that lasted much longer than my celebrity styling assisting. The stylists in Philadelphia are wonderful, and while commercial styling is still stressful, it's not as intense. My commercial styling work was displayed in all of the professional sports stadiums in Philadelphia, on billboards and magazines, on national TV commercials. I did styling for companies like AAA, Bristol-Myers Squibb, SEPTA, and the beautiful pajama brand Print Fresh. You might not recognize the name, but you'll know the patterns as soon as you see them. Just do a quick Google search. While it was exciting to go to a Phillies game and see my work, I missed the emotional connection that I have with my personal styling clients. And telling people that I spent my work week seeing personal styling clients didn't sound as glamorous as, oh, I styled for a household name company. But I knew the personal styling part of my career was what really lit me up and fed my soul. The emotional and physical transformations that I facilitate with my clients is absolutely the best part of what I do. So I dedicated even more time and effort into growing my client base, and eventually I stopped doing commercial styling altogether. Now I constantly reevaluate what success looks like for me. And now I know that it feels like facilitating these transformations for my incredible clients and having the freedom in my life to be with my family and to be with the people that mean the most to me. Reflecting on my career journey so far, I realized that teaching taught me how to use my voice, and becoming a personal stylist showed me that my voice mattered. And now here we are. Thanks for taking the time to listen. The best way to support this podcast is to subscribe and leave a rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts.